Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Did you guys hear about that vehicle that came from somewhere out there just to land in the Andes?
Was it round? Did it have a motor?
Or was it something different?
I don't have the details.
Oh, did a vehicle, like, fly along the mountains and then find a place to park itself?
Or did someone build a place to leave a space for such a thing to land?
Guacamole Queen?
Guacamole Queen!
Well, gentlemen, welcome to day two. This is Thursday edition of Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Jay Rossman.
I'm Nick Klein.
And I'm Greg Lohman.
And we're back. We're filling in for Jim and Patrick. They are on break this week. We're going to be filling in with a couple episodes talking about the man, the myth, and the legend that is Mr. Frank Vincent Zappa.
Indeed.
Yeah. So we've kind of gone through and given everybody a bit of an overview, and I think we're going to do a bit of a deeper dive into some of his rock and roll personality. A side that I think most people are familiar with from hits like Don't Eat the Yellow Snow, I'm the Slime.
Disco Boy. Yeah.
Disco Boy is another good one. What are some other of his big hits?
Mm. Well, we played a few yesterday. Montana.
Sure.
We played Joe's Garage, Peaches and Regalia.
Yeah, Joe's Garage.
Willie the Pimp, people might know.
Dang straight.
It's all good.
It is. The breadth of work that the guy produced.
Yeah, the guy was so prolific. He was so prolific. I don't think we touched on that yesterday. I was looking through this morning when we were getting ready for this, and he put out, in his lifetime, he put out 62 albums.
Wow.
And then his family trust, essentially, has been still releasing music that he hadn't gotten around to releasing, a lot of which is live music, but definitely some original. And they've had 50 albums released since he died.
That's it.
And that doesn't even include the box sets, like You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore, and I think Lather and a couple others.
Sure.
But just an incredible amount of work.
That puts you in some pretty rare company. I mean, what is it, like Miles Davis might have that many?
That sounds about right.
I can't even think of another one off the top of my head.
I don't know. I remember as a kid, my dad was really into Frank Zappa, and to get a kid into Frank Zappa, you kind of have to go to like the silly stuff. But I remember that being a number he would throw out when I was little. This guy's put out, you know, at that point it was like 54 albums or something like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just thinking like, wow, that is a lot. That's
mm-hmm.
How many years has he been recording? Because that's more than one a year, I think, right?
It's just, yeah. And his music is dense. I mean, it's not like you can just, you know, Miles Davis, with all due respect, but like, you know, Miles was able to kind of pull some session players together and had a really cool vision. But like, his music didn't always necessarily take a lot of time to really cultivate.
Right. Hey, man, let's play this on G minor for like 20 minutes. Okay. Let's see how it goes.
That kind of thing.
Hey, Dio.
Yeah. But, you know, Frank's music is, you know, black pages.
Yeah. You see any pictures of his, you know, the basement in his Los Angeles home, it's just sheet music everywhere. He was just constantly writing, just constantly composing.
Which is another thing, his work schedule too, right?
Oh, yeah.
What was it? Is it 18 hours on, 12 off?
That sounds about, there's a part in the real Frank Zappa book where I think it was, I can't remember how it
brings. 18 hours on, no, it was 18 on, 8 off, because it added to 26, which means he didn't have a 24-hour day.
Right.
He would, so his like lunch and dinners would coincide different times of the day,
right,
depending on what course of schedule. So his kids remember, like, their one of their memories of dad as a kid was him just randomly coming out of the studio in the basement, you know, putting some hot dogs on bread, putting in the microwave for 2 minutes while he smoked a cigarette and brewed another pot of coffee, and then going back with his burnt weenie sandwich down to the basement to record for another 6 hours or something like that.
See you tomorrow, Dad.
Yeah, and it was day in and day out. Just, oh, craziness.
But with so many albums, you know, it's kind of hard. I know it's intimidating for me if somebody says, hey, I know you're into Zappa. What would you recommend I listen to?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I know we all have our favorites. But if, just quick lightning round, guys, you know, Greg, let's start with you. If you had to pick, let's say, 3 albums for just a guy who's into music, you know, has a pretty eclectic taste, what are 3 Zappa albums you would point to?
Well, I think a safe start might be Hot Rats.
Okay.
Which just kind of has displays the funkiness and the creativity, but also like the the prowess.
It's accessible.
Yeah, it's a little more accessible. It's also not terribly long, if I remember correctly. I like
it's very short.
Yeah, so that'd be kind of a safe one to start with. And then I would maybe then venture to... I mean, I loved Roxy and Elsewhere was like life-changing for me.
Of course.
Because yeah, the chops that the musician... I mean, you got George Duke. We'll get to like the people who he had in his band, but the band is just on fire. It's live, and it's... I just couldn't believe what I heard when I heard that stuff. And then coming from around that same time, but a studio record would be One Size Fits All. I think that one is also just as mind-bending. And just even with today's technology, you wouldn't be able to pull a lot of that stuff off. It's just nuts. Yeah. It's so far ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm. All right, Nick, what would you say?
Well, I would have to caveat it by saying that I would try to get to know the person to see what areas I felt like they would connect to. But Greg got two of them. One Size Fits All is definitely, that's hands down my favorite studio album of his. And honestly, I have to agree, Roxy and Elsewhere, which the video documentary that came out a couple years ago, I'll tell you what, I'd read so much about how much of that album had been like overdubbed after the fact. Whatever, man. That is a live video recording, and they hit it. Like,
incredible.
I would be hard-pressed of pointing out where things aren't exactly like they are on the record. So, whatever. They did it live. Yep. They did it live. Roxy and Elsewhere, One Size Fits All, and We're Only in It for the Money, I think.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. I think that touches on, like, his poignant analysis of where America was at that time, and all the crazy stuff that was going through people's heads in the late 60s, I think in and of itself, a brilliant record.
Yeah. You've always been much more open to those late 60s albums than myself. I enjoy We're Only in It for the Money, but I think that's a little bit too dense for Joe Sixpack.
Sure. I just knew it was one you guys wouldn't pick. So what do you got, Jay?
What can I say? I would do Roxy and Elsewhere and One Size Fits All, because I think any rock guy who's into rock or mainstream or pop music could enjoy them. And my third would be, you know, it's not very adventurous, but it would have to be Apostrophe.
Okay.
I really think that's, you know, people don't give it enough credit because it starts with Don't Eat the Yellow Snow. But the other songs on there, especially songs like Apostrophe with Jack Bruce and Stinkfoot and one of my favorites, Uncle Remus. And the song that we're about to play is on there as well.
Well, let me caveat. All right. So, We're Only in It for the Money would be for the indie, the guy who's like also into the Beach Boys or something.
Good call.
Okay.
Good call.
If I would actually say for somebody that's in more in mainstream, I'd actually throw out something like Lather, which is actually a really good compendium of mixed crap that actually has a great balance. And it's not by any, it wasn't like a studio album. It was kind of just like a hodgepodge of stuff he couldn't fit onto other records. But it's got like Gregory Peckery, which I think is a great long form, ridiculous like third side of an album. I'd throw that one in there as an alternative to We're Only in It for the Money. I apologize, I cut you off. What song are we listening to?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, the thrust of this episode was supposed to be rock music, but as we're wont to do, we just went off down a rabbit hole. So we were going to play Cosmic Debris, which was a minor hit off of the album Apostrophe.
The mystery man came over and he said, I'm out of sight. He said, for a nominal service charge, I could reach Nirvana tonight. If I was ready, willing, and able to pay him his regular fee, he would drop all the rest of his pressing affairs and devote his attention to me. But I said,
look here, brother, who you jiving with that cosmic debris?
Now who you jiving with that cosmic debris? A razor and a can of foaming goo. But he told me right then, when the top popped open, there was nothing his box won't do with the oil of Aphrodite and the dust of the Grand Wazoo. He said, you might not believe this, little fellow, but it'll cure your asthma too. And I said,
man, there are so many things that I could talk about after hearing that song. I mean, the first thing that pops to mind is just the unique way that he records his vocals. Mm. I mean, he was slobbering right on the mic. You can hear every thing that he had for breakfast that morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was after he got like punched off the stage in Europe by some like crazy fan who thought he was making eyes at his girlfriend.
That's right.
And he screwed his windpipe up, so his voice dropped like half an octave. Yeah, and Ruth Underwood. Ruth Underwood's fantastic. I got to throw that in there.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but is that Tina Turner singing backup?
It is. It is. Tina Turner and the Iketts.
Mm. I mean, come on, you know? But we'll get to the extraordinary list of people who have been who recorded with Frank a little later on. But
that's a big one. But we can only play a section of these songs, and so we're not going to get to the awesome guitar solo on that one and all over Apostrophe and Overnight Sensation and all of his 70s albums. But you know, Greg, you're a guitar player, I'm a guitar player, Nick, you are not, so you can
I'll shut
take
up.
A little pit stop if you like.
Have a seat.
All right.
I'm just kidding. Talk about his guitar playing, man. Talk about his style and
He influenced practically everyone who came after him, I would say, especially as lead guitarists. But what's interesting about Frank Zappa is that he had a lot of ability on the guitar, but it still never felt like, I mean, really, he seemed most at ease as a composer. And even though he could play some serious scorching lead, I think his vocabulary was maybe in a good way, almost a little limited to mostly like pentatonic blues scales. He didn't really have, I think...
Are you saying there's something wrong with that, Greg?
Absolutely not. Not at all. But
as a guy who can only play pentatonic
scales. And he could play his lines, but I guess what I mean is like when he was improvising in all his solos, that's mostly what I hear is kind of a blues approach. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, he would rock an SG through a Marshall and, you know, just kill it. And... you know, he was also pre like Stevie Ray Vaughan and Van Halen. But when guys like Van Halen started coming out and, you know, eventually Steve Vai, who he hired, by hiring someone like Steve Vai, it was clear that he would be willing to bring people on to do something that I don't know if he ever really quite figured out how to do, which he labeled stunt guitar.
Stunt
you know, which I always loved because that's such a perfect name for it. You know, it's like it's like a Hollywood thing almost too. It's like, oh, you have a stunt double, you know. And so Steve Vai was like his guitar stunt double, you know. And if you guys don't know who Steve Vai is, I mean, he's like Van Halen on steroids, you know, just absolutely over the top, like screeching like a bazillion notes in a second kind of player.
He got his start with Zappa, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Right. What's the story, Jay, with the... Was there like an audition or something? No.
Yeah, he was absolutely obsessed with Zappa as a musician and as a guitar player and was in love with this song, The Black Page. And he actually wrote to Zappa and said, hey, look, check this out. I transcribed all of The Black Page solo, you know, in actual music notation and I think tab as well. And just wrote to Zappa and said, hey, look what I can do.
That is quite a feat. And he was 16 at the time, I think, he did this.
Right. Something ridiculous like that. And so that got Zappa's attention, obviously, took him out on the road and was his stunt guitar player for all the really tough technical stuff where Frank could just go to the edge of the stage and smoke a cigarette.
Yeah. Pretty awesome. Same with the drummers, too. That was Terry Bozzio was his other little man boy.
Yeah, exactly.
And he would just parade around and make him do crazy stuff.
But, you know, I think that it was just such a massive challenge to be in Frank's band for not only just the technical prowess that you needed, but he was very disciplined and expected a very high standard. No drugs, you know, like no screwing around. It was like basically like you were in an orchestra or whatever, you know. It was a serious, serious job. Unfortunately, a lot of really talented people got kicked out of Frank's band because they couldn't hang, you know, on the road with him. but he had that standard. And but the guys,
it was a job.
Yeah, and the guys who did make it out, like Steve Vai and Terry Bozzio, they ended up, you know, kind of gracing the guitar and drum magazine covers for like the next 30 years. You know?
And then they would kind of continue that same work ethic.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that once it's kind of like, I just imagine being in their position, kind of not being able to unsee what you saw, you know, and and like
it's the ultimate back in my day story, really.
So it's like after you've been in a band like that, it's very difficult to kind of be like, oh, it's okay, you know, like we'll just keep it, we'll keep
let's
things
just practice
simple.
A couple hours a week, right?
Yeah, no, no,
instead of 12 hours a
because
day.
Because you sort of you come to grips with what's possible, and you know,
yes,
but in order for that to be achieved, you have to also accept the fact that that work ethic needs to be on the same level as Frank's, you know. So I think he set the bar extremely high.
Well, let's play a highlight of one of his guitar solos.
Please.
This is one of my favorites. The song is called Inca Roads. It's off of our collectively favorite album,
One
Size Fits All, right? This is the opening track. Just a real quick cool story about this song is that the guitar solo for this is actually taken from a live version of this same song that he recorded on the road before the album version came out. So the beginning album version was done in a studio or studios, and then they spliced in this live guitar track, which is just, I mean, I don't even know.
How the hell do you do that?
How do you do that?
He had Pro Tools, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He had Beat Detective.
Just a Control-V type thing. So anyway, this is the guitar solo.
He had a pro freaking drummer is what he had.
Good point.
Oh man, and that is just a taste. That's the first track off One Size Fits All, which is
incredible.
Like we said, we kind of all identified that.
George Duke just killing the vocal on that thing.
Okay, so we were talking about people that he played with. We've talked about Steve Vai. Who else have we mentioned?
Well, on guitar, he also had Adrian Belew.
Okay, right.
Ike and Tina Turner.
Okay, yeah. Ike and Tina Turner.
Vocals and the Iketts.
George Duke on keys
vocals
and vocals.
And keys.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And then
for a very, very brief period at the end of the 60s, Lowell George, the slide player for Little Feat, actually.
Oh, really?
In the Mothers, yeah.
And a who's who of drummers. You know, you've got. Who do you have, Nick?
Terry Bozzio, right?
Never heard
of him. Chad Wackerman.
Who?
Never. And Vinny Colander. What's his name? What do you call him, Greg?
Caliuda.
Vinny
Caliuda. I don't know how to say his name, but I can spell it.
Vinny Caliuda, I'm just kidding. Vinny Caliuda, yeah. And Jimmy Carl Black. I don't think he made our list, but I love him.
Yeah. Jim Gordon, famed studio drummer, played with Eric Clapton for a long time. Also played in Mothers for a little while.
Nice.
Yeah, played with all kinds of different people. And from so many different spectrums, you know, so many different parts of the musical community. Pretty incredible stuff.
Indeed.
Yeah, it was really just a matter of, like, if someone had a mastery of the instrument and the work ethic to show up for rehearsals and stay for the 12-hour days, I feel like that was the bar.
Yeah,
because he had what, Jean-Luc Ponty, right? The like jazz violinist.
Yeah, yeah, he was on, I think, Hot Rats.
Yeah, that's him on Willie the Pimp, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's badass.
Pretty cool stuff. So yeah, this episode we kind of delved into some of the rock stuff, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah,
at least
so.
We talked about a lot of stuff. We
filled speaking of rock,
at least 15 minutes.
Sting, right? Didn't he play with Sting?
of course.
No. He had him. What's the story? I think actually we got a clip for it, but he had him come out on stage during like some tour he was doing, which ended up on Broadway the Hard Way, and it's a fantastic bit.
Zappa's later albums from 88. It's a great one. And Nick, you actually turned me on to this one. I think you had it on CD. You let me borrow it for a little while. Mm-hmm. Pretty great album.
Compliments to Guy Klein. God bless you. Yep.
There you go. Broadway the Hard Way. And there's this great clip of them doing... He introduces Sting out on stage, and they play Murder by Numbers. And that song is immediately preceded by... Was Stolen Moments? Whose jazz song is that, Greg?
Oliver Nelson.
Oliver Nelson. You're right. They do this great... improv on that leads into the song that we're going to go out on. But just to wrap it up here, remember Jim and Patrick will be back next week. We have our own podcast. It's called You Should Check It Out, and you should check that out. We are up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those places. You can send Jim and Patrick an email at rock@suburbspod.com. Or if you do the social media stuff, you can find them at SuburbsPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. So tomorrow, gentlemen, Friday, we're going to close things out. We're going to talk about the stuff that we like, the really avant-garde out there stuff, and some of his compositional stuff and some of his orchestral scores.
Is that about the composer? Yeah.
And whatever else we feel like squeezing in
before we're kicked out of this joint. Yeah.
Right. It's been nice hanging out in the studios, though. You know, the nice microphones.
Jim and Patrick have really made a heck of a place here. This is
cushy chairs, nice beer.
Good, of course. And they flew us out. That was amazing.
Right. Yeah. All expenses paid. First class. At least I think that's what they said.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you guys. We'll see you all tomorrow. And in the meantime, here is Mr. Sting with Murder by Numbers.
I just talked to him in the dressing room a little while ago, and I said, how would you, Mr. Sting, like to come out on stage and perform with us?
It's not in my nature to kick a man when he's down. When I saw the first half of the show, I realized I had to come out here and tell you something. But 4 years ago, Jimmy Swaggart said this about me. He said, this here song by the Police, Murder by Numbers, was written by Satan. Performed by the sons of Satan. Beelzebub. Lucifer, the Horned One. I wrote the song, all right? Once that you've decided on a killing, first you make a stone of your heart. If you find that your hands are still willing, then you can turn a murder into art. There really isn't any need for bloodshed. You just do it with a little more finesse. If you can slip a tablet into someone's coffee, then it'll voice an awful lot of mess. Because it's murder by numbers 1, 2, 3. It's as easy to learn as your ABC. Murder by numbers 1, 2, 3. It's as easy to learn as your A.
No, just keep it rolling.
Just keep rolling?
Yeah.
All right.
So Jay had to step out. this break's brought to you by Goodreads. Goodreads. Books you should read.
Yeah.
Greg, who's the sponsor that you got?
LegalZoom.
LegalZoom.
LegalZoom. Yeah.
Please consult an attorney.
Yeah, LegalZoom. Before you do anything.
Right. We've got forms. LegalZoom.
Mm-hmm. Fill them out.
Good one.
LegalZoom.com.
And Audible.
Audible.
Books you don't have to read. Audible.
Audible. You got a lot of
Bedtime
Audibles.
Stories for adults. Audible.